Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, and as usual, you're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CommunityProgressiveRadio.org. My guest today, or our Soapbox guest today, is revolutionary artist, illustrator with a cause, Anthony Frieda, and I feature Anthony's work in many of my newsletters and pieces on my blog. And Anthony is an award-winning illustrator. His work has appeared in such publications as Rolling Stone, New Yorker, Esquire, New York Times, The Voice, Entertainment Weekly, Playboy, and Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Anthony Frieda. Anthony Frieda, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, it's nice to finally talk to you in person. I know we've been email buddies and Facebook buddies for quite a long time, and your art, your images and your art really have affected me deeply. You know, people say a picture is worth 1,000 words, and you really, like, make a statement with, and I think most artists try, you know, they try to do this with their artwork, but your images, like, really are like, they could be pieces of, you know, editorials or something like that, because they're so meaningful and they have so much going on with them in your images, which are visually stunning, but also very, like I said, they have a lot of, you infuse a lot of meaning into your images, and I use them a lot on my newsletter. People who follow the show and follow my blog have seen your images a lot because I do use them a lot. So tell me and my listeners, I'm very interested in this, is what is your focus, and really what inspires you to create such amazing art?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for those kind words. People that inspire me are, first of all, you. I want to just make that clear. You've been a huge inspiration to me. Your courage and just fearlessness in the face of this bizarre opposition to your simple mission to work for peace, mm-hmm. I think is just, you're an example for everyone, and I'm trying to do kind of a visual artistic equivalent of what you're doing through political activism, and I think the imagery, obviously imagery is used against us and to promote war throughout history, you know, just in the 20th century, the Chi-Coms and the Italian Mussolini fascists and the Nazis, they all used the best artists in the country to promote their propaganda of pro-war and pro-state, you know, ideas. And what I want to do is turn it on its head, kind of. Let's, instead of promoting these nefarious agenda, let's promote peace, let's promote love, let's promote the things that we share as in common as humanity, and try to bring people together rather than divide them. And I think, there's really no higher calling. And as far as my imagery, the very nice things you said about it come from the idea that, like Picasso said, no image is interesting unless it tells a story. It's boring. Yeah. So I try to tell a story, and I try to sometimes get a little humor in there, because it just, you know, kind of tempers the message, which can be, you know, pretty strong at times. We're talking about serious issues, you know, war and peace and life and death. I mean, these are serious things. And but if you're too didactic and too strident, it turns people off. And that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to do the opposite and bring people in.
Mm-hmm. Well, you almost are like a editorialist, a cartoonist. Only you don't use words, but your images. Well, sometimes you have words, but they're not like, you don't have like little bubbles, little
squeaky. Yeah, that's cheating. That's too easy.
On your chest.
I do some cartoons, and it really does make it a lot easier when you can, you know, use words to kind of help convey the message. But if you can do it with just an image, I think it's so much more powerful, because it's people, then they can take their own kind of take on it, and they put their own ideas into it. Whereas once you put words on it, it kind of it narrows the focus and it limits it. And I like having a little bit of mystery to the work, because it just in any art that gives it another dimension and makes it more compelling.
Well, just like anything, I think people look at something and it might mean something to them today, but in a month or a year or 10 years, it might mean completely something different.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So anyway, do you get any kind of hate mail or anything for your images? Are really, you don't like sugarcoat anything, that's for sure, kind of like me.
we know how to make friends, don't we, Cindy?
Yeah, I know.
It's funny because I alienate people from both the left and the right. Apparently nobody likes me, but I consider myself a political atheist. I know you do too. Both teams seem like, you know, different crime families to me. I don't know why one is better than the other. And it's bizarre because my messages are coming from the left. You know, these anti-war messages, you know, pro-civil liberty message, which is traditionally, you know, a left-wing kind of perspective.
Right.
But in the age of Obama, everything's twisted on its head, where somehow a left-wing perspective is considered, makes you persona non grata. I mean, it's just like we're in the twilight zone here. My message now is the same as it was, and I know yours is too. You've been consistent from the Bush era to the Obama era. Your message hasn't changed.
Right.
And is what's changed is people's perception of it and their tribal loyalties to the Democratic Party all of a sudden make them embracing the same policies they were screaming about 5 years ago. It's very bizarre to me, and I know it is to you too, and it's something that's I'm in constant struggle with. But, you know, listen, we have a very consistent, very simple message, I think, and I don't know. It's very hard for people to be objective. You know, those tribal loyalties run very deep.
Well, 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago, to some people, I was brilliant, and now I'm just a bitter ideologue. So.
Yeah, I know. Isn't that interesting? And your like I said, your message is exactly the same. So how did that get flipped on its head? It's interesting that I give a lot of credit to guys like to you, of course, but for your consistency. But Jimmy Carter recently said, we no longer have a functioning democracy. He's been very vocally critical of Obama's drone policy. And I think, he has a lot of guts. He's not some radical extremist. This is an ex-president Democrat. I mean, my goodness. When he's saying it, you'd think that would be enough to wake up the so-called left in this country. But it's going to take a lot.
Well, of course, we didn't have a functioning democracy when he was in office either. We've never really had one. But, again, these Obama lovers are demonizing anybody who is even slightly critical of Obama, like Carter or, I guess, Tavis Smiley got on their shit list recently for something.
Yeah. Cornel West. I mean, anybody... I mean, it's like a personality cult to me, where they're not interested in objectivity or you know any progressive agenda. They're interested in this kind of I don't know. I can't explain it other than saying it's kind of a cult of a personality, where personality is all that matters, and everybody else is kind of a heretic.
Well, and I point out to them too when I get their hate mail or hate messages on Facebook or whatever from the Democrats. I won't even call them the left, because they're actually to the right of Reagan and Nixon.
Yeah.
But, you know, I point out to them that their emails sound exactly like the emails I got from the Bush supporters, only usually from them they're spelled correctly and punctuated correctly. That's the only difference. Because
I think Richard Stallman said,
I'm not being
oh my
mean.
Goodness.
True.
It's crazy. It's crazy, Cindy. I think Richard Stallman said we used to have a word for today's Democrats. We called them Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's true.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, it's hypocrisy on both sides. You know, all of a sudden the Republicans are screaming about these, you know, all the infringements on our civil liberties and the Bill of Rights.
Right.
You know, where were they 5 years ago when Bush was doing it was fine?
Right.
And
they should be supporting Obama. I know when they call me a hypocrite for not protesting Obama, first of all, I point out that they're absolutely 100% incorrect about that. But why aren't they supporting him?
They should love him.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. But he has left cover. He, you know, he would never, you know, he doesn't want war or to you know, destroy our the civil liberties because he's a Democrat. He's half black, and he has this kind of cover that gives him a license to do whatever he wants. And it's just it's very hard to overcome that with any activism. Obviously, I mean, if it was Bush who was had his, you know, Terror Tuesdays where he's committing war crimes and he has his baseball cards and just extrajudiciously slaughtering people without any charges or evidence or anything other than he says by royal edict they need to be executed, and he does it. If that was Bush doing that, there would be Democrats outside the White House every Tuesday. It would be protests all over the country. I mean, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I think that really Obama's election effectively destroyed the anti-war movement, which is sad because, you know, we still have wars going on. But like the Guantanamo issue is an issue I know you care about. And Bush, like, captured these people and put them in Guantanamo, which was bad enough. But now Obama has a policy of just slaughtering them, like you said, on Terror Tuesdays. He picks out ones are going to have a Hellfire missile dropping on their neighborhood.
Well, no, they've admitted that it's easier to do that than it is to ship them to Guantanamo and worry about the whole legal morass that, you know, would follow, and indefinitely detain them and not charge them and not give them trials or any, you know, access to legal to help. So they admit it. Just it's a lot easier to kill them. And it's just shocking.
And anybody who is over 16, any male over 16 is a terrorist. And so that cuts down on their innocent civilians or collateral damage count if you call every male over 16 a terrorist.
Well, my God, Cindy, I mean, I am so shocked about this whole Anwar al-Awlaki's son, I forget his name, but he's a 16-year-old boy.
Abdul Rahman.
Yeah, I mean, this boy was targeted and executed. What was his crime? What did he do? And I think one of the officials in the White House said, well, he picked the wrong father.
What? Yeah.
That was their response.
Yeah.
It's just, it's hard to fathom. You know, we're supposed to be the good guys. And that's what I think, the way I see that you and I are working for this this idea. That, listen, we're supposed to be better than people who torture people. We're supposed to follow a rule of law. We're supposed to charge people before we execute them. I mean, these are simple, basic, you know, rules of law that were established, you know, at the Magna Carta that, you know, hundreds of years ago. This is not, you know, some radical stuff. And we're throwing these simple, basic ideas of the rule of law out the window because we're scared and because the terror machine has whipped us into a frenzy that there's, you know, terrorists hiding under every rock that want to murder us.
Just like the communists back in the good old days.
Absolutely, the Red Scare. They just changed the boogeyman. Instead of, you know, the scary communist, now he's a guy with a beard and a turban. And anyway, this is what I'm trying to do with my art. It's kind of the Buddhist idea of flipping it on its head, like taking fear and turning it into courage, taking hate and turning it into love. I mean, you know, come at it from the inverse, the opposite of what is being projected on you by the mainstream media, by the government, and by the propaganda machine of the military-industrial complex.
Well, speaking of Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki, didn't you send me a meme about, you know, Obama saying something about, you know, if he had a son, Trayvon Martin would look like his son, but then he murdered Abdul Rahman al-Awlaki, that kind of looks like he could be Obama's
son. Yeah, he looks like he could be his son, too. You know, I don't selectively mourn for the death of a child. I mourn for Trayvon, and I mourn for Abdul. I mean, what's the difference? I mean, if anything, you know, the death of Abdul was even more heinous because what did he do? What was his crime?
Right.
I mean, there wasn't, you know, he wasn't beating anybody up or in an altercation. He was just sitting in his house and a drone, a Hellfire missile launched from a Predator drone, blew him up. 16-year-old kid.
Right, and it's from, and he got blown up by somebody that actually lived thousands of miles away from him.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
the drone operator pushed this button on by order of, you know, the president, who looks like he could be Abdul Rahman's father. Just like
he
had a son, Trayvon Martin would look like him. So, and well, just the inverse of that, of all this, like, it's bad to kill white American kids at school or if they're walking down the street, which it is. I'm not saying that it's good. But then it's okay to drop a Hellfire missile on a neighborhood in Pakistan or, you know, Afghanistan or Yemen or things like that. But the inverse of this is this recent royal baby, whom I call the newest addition to the line of blood-sucking parasites. And so I watched a brilliant thing on The Daily Show with John Oliver, who's British. And he said, you know, this all this hoopla around this one baby is basically telling the rest of the babies born that day, you know, F you.
Yeah.
So
why do we care? Didn't we, you know,
exactly.
Start a country to get away from hereditary monarchies and this whole idea that we're commoners and they're lords and they're better than us? I mean, I'm baffled by this, you know, fascination. Who cares? There's
and
more important things going on in the world.
We're like peasants to these people.
Yeah, they don't like us. They think of us, you know, as expendable. I mean, they think of us as just commoners that, you know, happen to be in the way of their, you know, their existence.
Well, slaves for their exploitation is what they look at it for.
It's modern. It's a modern serfdom. I mean, it's almost like the Stockholm syndrome, where people are worshiping the people who are holding them captive.
Exactly. So let's move on to your latest project, which is to do interesting things with Thomas Kincaid's art. So talk about, you know, how you feel about that art and what you're doing. Well, it's kind of mass produced. And I told you, I had from my prior days,
yeah.
I have a small one on my wall that I would love for you to decorate.
I would love to. I would be happy to. I hate to beat up on poor Thomas.
Your prints and stuff. I have this little my Frida Kahlo and Diego Rivera and Van Gogh. I have this little tiny Thomas Kincaid thing.
Oh. Well, I mean, I hate to beat up on old Thomas, you know, but I think. And he was a brilliant, brilliant marketer. But I think he was tapping into kind of this nostalgic view of America that really never was, where everything is perfect and it's, you know, these candy-colored clouds and everything's peaceful and wonderful. And he did that, I think, as a calculated effort to promote this idea of an America that never existed, and a deceptive America, and which is fine. I mean, that's what he did. That was his thing. But I think it was a shallow kind of patriotism, where it's kind of like, you know, people. He's a visual equivalent of people who chant these slogans like "support troops" or "USA," while at the same time they support these policies that are sending troops into meat grinders based on fraudulent pretexts. So how is that supporting the troops? I never got that. But like I said, I don't want to beat up on this guy, but I'm taking his kind of very shallow vision of America, and I want to impart this idea of, you know, what's really going on in this country at this moment. onto his work. And I think by using the drones, they're just a potent symbol of everything that's wrong with what we're doing right now. I mean, waging illegal wars all over the world, waging illegal surveillance on innocent Americans at home. And the drone is a powerful symbol because I think it infringes on everything that this country stands for. And that's why I picked that particular image. I'm going to go around the country and kind of take his work and modify it to my own vision of the new America, and in an effort to get this message across to people. And I also want to do what I really want to do is have it become a larger idea where I'll send stencils to people who want it all over the world. I mean, these stores are all over the world. That's why it interests me, because it could be a global campaign of raising awareness to the cost of the drone wars. So I'll send stencils to anybody anywhere in the world where if there's a Thomas Kincaid gallery in their town, and they can do their own effort. And I want proceeds to go to you and to other people working for peace and for freedom.
Cool. Very, very good. So how do you think of Thomas Kincaid, like, compared to somebody like Norman Rockwell, for example?
Well, they're similar in the fact that, like I say, it's just kind of, even Norman Rockwell, what he was doing, he was working in the 20th century, and his work was nostalgic for, like, the 19th century.
Uh-huh.
You know, a kind of a pure version of 19th century America without any darkness, and kind of had this, he made sure there was nothing controversial that, so it would appeal to the broadest demographic. But, I mean, he towards the end of his career, he started getting a little political, so at least he had some sort of social conscience. I think Kincaid, conversely, was really interested in just this very shallow idea of creating these almost Potemkin village creations of like a facade of what America should be, a facade of what the world is, where everything is wonderful and there's nothing ominous and there's no threats and we're all just happily secure in our little thatched cottages with the smoke coming out.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm going to drop drone bombs on those thatched cottages. Because
right.
That's the reality. This is what's happening. You know, and this is what I'm working against.
So your illustrations have appeared in some prominent publications. Didn't Norman Rockwell used to illustrate for the Saturday Evening Post?
That's right. He worked for every major publication, uh-huh. But they were the prominent ones.
Yeah, so what ones? You have appeared in some very prominent, your illustrations have.
Yeah, I've worked for probably every magazine in this country at some point, from Time to Rolling Stone, New Yorker, and a lot of financial publications. And I kind of want to bite the hand that feeds me because I work for mainstream media at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I want to try to, I'm fighting against their, you know, obvious talking points and the whole, you know, Operation Mockingbird idea that they're funded by the Pentagon and by special interests, and they really are corporate and government mouthpieces to a large extent. And this is, I mean, the exciting thing to me is that this is becoming mainstream knowledge right now. And what you're doing and what the rest of the mainstream, rest of the alternative media is doing, this is a counterpoint to their juggernaut of propaganda. And this is a very exciting time. You know, we can become the mainstream if we just are relentless and if they don't shut us down.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
People working against, I mean, the way they promoted the Iraq war was so disgusting and so obvious to anybody who's paying attention. They said the mushroom clouds are coming and they have weapons mm-hmm. of mass destruction and ties to Al-Qaeda, and it was all lies. It was all lies. Every piece of that pretext to that war was a lie. And we in the alternative media, people like you and people like that I work with and myself, mm-hmm. we were working against that. And we were right. And I think people are slowly, a lot of people are waking up to the fact that we are right and they were lied to. And I mean, do you really think that he just decided after the Iraq war to stop lying to us?
Right.
Of course exactly. Not. Oh, you know, I was wrong. Where does this stop lying? You know, no more lying, all right? Of course they're still lying. Now they're lying about Syria. Now they're lying about Iran. Now they're lying about whatever the new war they want to wage is. And,
well,
it's like they have
a template or something, and they just like fill in the blanks for the newest evil dictator who's killing his own people, or you know, then they erase Iraq and they fill in Libya, they erase you know, Hussein and fill in Gaddafi, and you know, now it's Assad and Syria, and it's just like, so the propaganda and the lies are so obvious that it's just like they have to rely on what we were talking about earlier, tribal loyalty, to get their bullshit through.
Absolutely. And that's the problem with the two-party system, is that one party can blame all the problems on the other, and the two, they prop each other up in that way, because neither party will accept any responsibility for anything, and they can demonize and point the finger at the other party to deflect any criticism of them, and they get away with murder. You know, when Republicans
are in
power, they get away with murder. And literally murder, yeah. And no, but I think a lot of people, and people that I'm attracted to, and people I'm working with, like you and a lot of other people, are working very hard to expose their tricks and their lies and their tactics, and the fact that they're, you know, reading talking points that are, and they have Pentagon-funded generals, you know, acting as impartial commentators. They're not impartial commentators. They're lying, reading Pentagon scripts, and we know that now. And you notice you don't see as many of them anymore as you did on the onset of the Iraq war. They were everywhere. Remember all those generals telling us how we had to go to war? You don't see them anymore. So we are having some effect. We're exposing their crimes and their lies, and they don't like it. But I think it's heartening to think that we are having some effect, and we need to just double, triple our efforts, and because we're working for the stakes are so large here. Any way we can do it, through art, through activism, through, we have this leverage power now with the internet, where one guy or one girl can tell the truth to the world, and if it's compelling and interesting and true, it will eventually, you know, have some effect on people.
Well, Anthony, Frieda, thank you so much for what you do. Would you like to talk about your current What's that exhibition, and somewhere where my listeners can go and look at your artwork and find out more information? And of course, I'll post it on my blog and your website and stuff.
Well, thanks so much, Cindy. I mean, you are a constant inspiration to me. Your courage and your determination, there is good and evil in the world, and you're a force for good. As far as my work, I have a show right now at A.J. Dillon Gallery in Atlantic Highlands, New Jersey. It's called Order Out of Chaos, and you can go to ajdillonart.com or anthonyfrieda.com and get more details.
Well, Anthony, it was great talking to you, and thanks so much for this interesting conversation, and keep up the good work, and hope to talk to you soon.
Thank you, Cindy. Same to you.
Okay, thanks for being on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
My pleasure.
Well, that's the Soapbox for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you were inspired to go and check out Anthony's work at anthonyfrieda.com. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer and connection with Community Progressive Radio, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank my guest, Anthony Frieda. I think it was a very interesting conversation we had. Anthony is obviously very well versed on these issues that we care about. And most of all, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. Peace out for now.